everybody, and welcome to Resettled, A Human Journey, ACCDC's premier podcast. My name is Jariana Rodriguez, and for this episode, we welcome Melanie Nesser, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs for HIAS. Now, HIAS stands for the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us today to discuss the advocacy work conducted by your organization. Can we just start by telling us a little bit about the work that you do for HIAS?
Sure, I'm happy to, and thanks so much for having me on. I'm always happy to work with ECDC. As you know, HIAS is one of the 9 national resettlement agencies, along with ECDC, and our work together goes back literally, you know, decades. So happy to be on. And I have been at HIAS for 18 years, so a long time. And in my current position, I'm the head of public affairs, which means I'm responsible for our outward-facing communications with the world. And that includes our communications department, so the work that we do with media, social media. It includes our policy and advocacy work that we do in Washington with Congress and the administration. It includes our community engagement work, which is the work we do across the country and around the world with Jewish communities to engage them on refugee advocacy and providing refugee assistance. And also our development and fundraising department, which is pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. And also part of public affairs is our new office, which is HIAS Europe, which we recently relaunched a year ago to reintroduce HIAS to the European Jewish community and to do some community engagement and outreach there.
Excellent. And I mean, like you said, HIAS has been around for a while, right?
4 years next year is our anniversary.
Wow. So what are some of the things that HIAS has done or does to protect refugees here in the U.S.?
Well, one of the things that we do, like I mentioned, is we are one of the 9 national resettlement agencies. So the U.S. resettlement program is about 40 years old, the official resettlement program. Of course, the U.S. has been welcoming refugees since its founding. But the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program is started in 1980. And since then, HIAS has been one of the 9 national agencies, along with ECDC, other organizations, some of which are faith-based, some of which are not. HIAS is the only Jewish resettlement agency. And through that program, the U.S. government identifies refugees abroad to bring to the United States to resettle. So people who have fled persecution, who can't be safe where they are overseas, who are brought here to this country to have a chance of safety and freedom and a new life. So HIAS is one of the agencies that, with our local partners around the countries, welcomes refugees, literally meeting them at the airport, you know, taking them to their new houses, setting up volunteers who can put food in the kitchen and get things started so they can begin their new lives here. Of course, that program has been dramatically cut since in the last 3 years of this administration, but historically that's one way that we've helped refugees. Another way is to work with asylum seekers. So asylum seekers are people who don't go through the formal refugee program because that program is so small, especially now. I mean, it's almost like winning the lottery. So these are people who flee persecution and come to the United States and ask for protection and for help. So they need lawyers, they need, you know, support services, they need all kinds of help just to get their applications together. So we do a lot of that work around the country, particularly in our headquarters office in Silver Spring, Maryland, in our New York office, and then along the U.S.-Mexico border, we actually have offices on both sides of the border to help asylum seekers. So those are just some of the ways that we help internally in the U.S.
That's wonderful. And do you know how many local offices does HIAS have around the country?
Yes, we're actually one of the smaller resettlement agencies. So I want to say, and I should have looked this up before I got on the phone with you. I want to say we have, I mean, fewer than 20 resettlement agencies, mostly located on the coasts, you know, on the West and East Coast and a couple other locations.
Yeah. I mean, the same for us. ECDC is also one of the smaller agencies, right? But we understand that, you know, even if you're small, you can have this big impact in your community. So you guys, I know that you guys have done tremendous work throughout the years.
Right. And the number of agencies, like you said, it doesn't, I mean, obviously the level of impact is different, but the resettlement agencies are very, you know, very connected to their communities. So for us, you know, we do a lot of work with the Jewish community to build support, and that helps with the national effort to build support for refugee resettlement. So what you do locally is very important.
Exactly. So going internationally, what is some of the work that HIAS is doing internationally to support refugees?
So actually, this has been a huge area of growth for us in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years. We actually operate now in 16 countries and provide a range of services to refugees overseas. So many of our offices are in Latin America. And then we also have some countries in Africa, some offices in Africa and Europe and in Israel. And our services are somewhat different because the populations are different, but we focus on four key areas of interventions to help refugees. So one is legal services, because refugees really can't start their lives again until they have some legal foundation, you know, some permission to stay from the government that they're in the country that they're in. So we see that as really the key piece to on the road to safety and freedom for refugees. So legal services is one. The other is mental health and community-based mental health programming. So for people who are traumatized or who just are generally need some assistance to help restart their lives, we have programming that helps them do that. We also have economic integration programs. So people who need microloans or job training or other kinds of assistance to, again, you know, you may be fleeing your country, you may have been a doctor, you may have been a government worker, you may have been a farmer. There are all different things that, you know, talents and skills that you bring that you may need help either transitioning or rebuilding in the country that you flee to. So we help with that. And then finally, we have a lot of programs around reducing gender-based violence and helping the victims of sexual and gender-based violence. Which is really pervasive around the world, obviously not just with refugees, but the stress of being a refugee. And now in a time of COVID, when people are, you know, more, you know, kind of stuck in their homes and less able to reach out, we really have been focused on ways to make sure that people get the protection and assistance that they need there.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that, like you said, a lot has changed, at least in this country, in the last few years due to the current administration. So how did this current administration change or impact the way HIAS does advocacy work?
I mean, this administration is completely different than any other administration that I've experienced. I've been in Washington, you know, for over 20 years, and my job prior to this was at HIAS. I was the head of our policy and advocacy department, which focuses on kind of our DC-based advocacy. So, you know, advocacy during the time of Clinton and Bush and Obama was very different. We had a lot more access to the administration, to administration officials. Not that we were always in agreement with them, but we certainly had a seat at the table. This administration has not asked for our input or our guidance, or based on our, you know, many, many years of expertise. So we don't really have access there to help shape policy, to provide information from the field, what we're seeing on the ground, what we're seeing the needs are. That kind of avenue has been closed for us in this administration in a way that it never has been before. Our work on Capitol Hill continues. There's still some strong support for refugee resettlement and assisting refugees, and on the broader immigration issues. I mean, this is a very important issue for many across the country and for many members of Congress. So our work continues there. But without, you know, a White House that's willing to engage in these conversations, it's been quite difficult to make some progress. Although Congress has, you know, in many ways kept the door open for foreign assistance and humanitarian assistance, and you know, allowed us to continue to provide relief to refugees overseas in a way that we really, you know, refugee resettlement to the United States has really been shut down, and the border has really been closed to asylum seekers.
And then add to that, that we're going through a global pandemic, I can imagine that the advocacy work has been even more so affected.
Yeah, I mean, our community, many communities, but I know the Jewish community, we like to get out into the street. We like to be together to, you know, to hold vigils and protests and just really voice our support for a nation that welcomes refugees and immigrants. And of course, that's been limited because of the situation that we're in. But I think I've seen a lot of activism online. We've been really trying to promote that as much as we can. And, you know, the world moved online to a great extent before COVID. It just was accelerated during COVID. So a lot of the advocacy, activism, and action that people are taking in support of refugees is happening. It's just happening online and not person to person. So we made the, you know, quick assessment when it looked like, you know, when we were all trying to figure out the impact of COVID, that we would pivot, as so many of us have in our personal lives and professional lives, to remote engagement. And while we really do miss the days where we could meet in person and support each other in person, you know, all is not lost. I mean, we can still do some really effective, influential work together online.
Yeah. I mean, I think like yourself, we've had to learn how to do everything remotely or most of everything remotely. So I sympathize. But can you just take us through, like, what does this remote engagement look like? Just a couple of actions that are done now remotely for you.
Sure. So, I mean, a lot of the work right now, you know, is... well, I mean, I don't even know where to start. So, I mean, there are different ways to engage, right? I mean, there are a lot of briefing calls and webinars and trainings that are being offered right now by HIAS and other organizations that are accessible now, you know, not just nationwide, but globally, that we, you know, we used to have to get everyone into a room. So it's actually more efficient, although maybe not, you know, we definitely miss being there in person, but more efficient to get the word out and to do these trainings and information sessions online. So all of that is happening. You know, there's also, you know, book groups and movie groups, you know, film watching groups, and we're getting authors to come in. And people are much more, I think, you know, open to those kinds of experiences because of the situation that we're in with the pandemic. And advocacy as well. I mean, as you know, everybody has moved online. So when we try to meet elected officials and their staff, they're also online. So setting up meetings, you know, sending, you know, again, social media, emails, all of those modes of communication, which we were using before, you know, are really just now being used even more. So there's a lot we can do from our homes. And we just, you know, every day we're trying to figure out more ways to engage online.
That's great to hear. And I imagine that, you know, the people who are listening or a lot of people are interested in doing advocacy work. Do you provide any sort of training opportunities specifically for those who are coming in to just do advocacy work for your organization?
Absolutely. So there are so many ways to be engaged right now, and I listed a few of them. And I'll just go through some of the ones that, you know, we highlight. I mean, one is, if you can, and understandably, this is a really tough time, is to donate. And even if it's a small amount, being a monthly sustainer for an organization that you trust and that you think is doing good work with refugees is a really important show of support. So even if it's a few dollars, if you can make that monthly, you know, that's really important to an organization to have that kind of commitment, to know that we can count on our donor base. So whether it's HIAS or another organization, Refugee Council USA is a coalition that most of us, including ECDC, belong to. And you can get some really good information about the different organizations and the work that we're doing if you're interested in that. Again, sign up for briefing calls, webinars, trainings. We have some training specifically geared towards the election. It's called our Vote for Welcome 2020 campaign that will help you if you want to get in touch with your candidates in your state or in your town, and to provide some education and information about refugees and asylum seekers. We have information on our website, and we also do some trainings. We have some state-specific trainings that we've been doing, really just to get our candidates educated and up to date about what's going on with refugee resettlement and with asylum seekers, so that they are informed and can talk about these issues and hopefully take positions that are consistent with a welcoming country. So that's one way. Volunteer. A lot of our volunteer opportunities already moved online, particularly for lawyers. If you have lawyers that are listening that can help, or people who are bilingual who speak Spanish in particular, whether you're a lawyer or not, there are lots of opportunities to help online with people who are seeking asylum. So those are just some of the things that people can still do. And to share, you know, to share on social media, we have a lot of resources, you know, like and retweet the things that you see that are meaningful for you so that your friends are reminded that this is an important and shouldn't, you know, fall to the back burner.
And yeah, and that falls right into my next question, which is just the different ways people can become allies for refugees. And, you know, not everybody can donate. So there are multiple options for people to get involved and engage with the newcomer populations.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are some ways. And I think another important way, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are doing this already, but to really stand up to hate. You know, because sometimes we let things slide. People will, you know, say things that, you know, whether it's anti-immigrant or, you know, xenophobic or anti-Muslim or whatever it is. And it's really important to educate yourself and be ready to respond to that and just shut that talk down. And again, you know, it may seem like it's not a lot, but it's really critical, especially right now when so much of this kind of anti-immigrant, anti-refugee sentiment is getting stirred up. I mean, we need to really stand firm against that.
Absolutely. And when you don't know, absolutely get educated. Just ask. The resettlement agencies most likely have the information that you need. So definitely reach out to them to be your source of information if you're ever wondering about the newcomer populations or if you ever have questions about refugees and immigrants in the U.S.
And there are a lot of great short videos that we've done and others have done that, you know, it doesn't have to be a chore to be educated. I mean, these are really compelling stories of people, refugees who, for example, are helping respond to the COVID-19 crisis or, you know, videos that explain how the asylum system works in 5 minutes or 10 minutes that are informative and interesting. So it's not, you know, nobody has to go out and, you know, read some boring textbook. There's a lot of great resources out there that can really get you up to speed, you know, within a matter of, you know, 15 minutes, a half an hour. And then certainly if you want to get more involved, there's more in-depth materials.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can honestly say that being engaged is actually very fun. I actually started coming into the refugee resettlement world by becoming a volunteer and intern, and I've been here ever since. So I can honestly vouch for that.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing happened to me. You know, it was just, you know, 30 years ago before you were probably born. But I mean, that's it. It became a calling for me and mm-hmm. and something that I've dedicated my entire, you know, career to. So, you know, just one example of that, we have a letter writing project where people volunteer to write letters to people who are in detention. And recently, a woman who was released from detention who won asylum contacted our program and said that she kept every single letter that she got and that they were so meaningful to her and kept her going because she was in detention. I don't want to say the wrong, but it was a very long time. And that's what kept her going. So the small act of spending, you know, a half an hour writing these letters, really made a huge impact on her life.
And it's so great to hear. So, you know, as a resettlement agency, obviously we know that we provide a number of services for the newcomer population depending on their barriers, whether it's, you know, reception and placement, employment, health-related services, etc. What do you think have been the main barriers, and I know there are many, refugees have faced during this pandemic?
I mean, you know, refugees are just like people like the rest of us, particularly, you know, but refugees who are here in the United States already, who are relying on our kind of support in their initial transition period as they start their lives here, they're experiencing the same things as everybody else, you know, especially, I mean, there are many of them were frontline workers who can't do their work remotely, who have lost their jobs, because if you can imagine, you know, if you're newly starting out in a country without perhaps the language skills, You're going to work in the service industry or in a hotel or some other type of situation where you were among the first people who lost their jobs. So we see, you know, the most critical need that refugees have with the people that we serve, and this is not just in the U.S. but globally, is access to cash, just like so many. So that's a big piece of it, making sure that people have some economic support just to get them through this time and get them to the next thing. And then just the strain of COVID. Again, you're in a new country. There's that mixture of gratitude and excitement because, as I said, getting resettled is such a long shot for people. There's only, I don't know if your listeners know this, the number of refugees that are allowed to be resettled in this country this year is 18,000. The historic norm is 95,000. This is lower than at any other time in the history of the program. Never has it been anywhere near this low. So with 26, 27 million refugees around the world, it's very unlikely that someone's going to be resettled. So when they do, and they're here, and they're, finally feeling safe and getting their feet on the ground, there's that mixture of also anxiety about COVID and about, the best way to protect their families and make a living. And so it's a tough time all around, but, it's tough for refugees right now. But I don't want to minimize the impact of this program. I mean, I don't think there's any refugee who isn't grateful and glad to have this opportunity and to finally be able to start their lives in a place where their children have a future.
Absolutely. And I think, this pandemic has sort of showed us new, different ways of doing what we do. And I think moving forward, at least our resettlement agency here, ECDC, we have to do things a little bit different to ensure that our clients are going to be protected if anything happens in the future. Do you think like resettlement agencies have to change the way they provide services permanently? And I say that because, for example, for our example is that our clients, we've started to do a lot of classes related to technology and how to use computers and how to be more savvy and more comfortable with technology. And that is now really it's going to be permanently part of our programming. Do you think something like that should happen all around?
Yeah, I mean, I think in ways like that, the pandemic has accelerated trends already, and certainly getting people technology skills is critical. It was important before, but is even more important now. So I think that just points to the need to be nimble and to adapt, because we never know what's going to be thrown at us or what's going to happen. And, refugees are really good at that because they've been through, they've been through situations that most of us can't even imagine, losing their homes, losing their community, not being able to work in their profession or field, worrying about family members who may be left behind. All of these things have given refugees kind of a resilience to weather change. So we can learn a lot from them and also support them as they shift and change and adapt to these new realities. But I think you're right. I think being nimble, being open, listening to refugees and as they tell us what they need. And then just, learning from their example as well of being, resilient, resourceful. And figuring out how to move on in times of extreme change and uncertainty.
Absolutely. I mean, refugees can teach us so much about how to be adaptable to change. So can you talk to us now a little bit about the Welcome Campaign for HIAS?
Sure. So this campaign we've had, this is a longstanding campaign of ours. It's there are other faith communities that do this as well. But so we started this, I would say, about 4 or 5 years ago. And what it is, it's very simple. It's our welcome campaign. And we invite congregations, synagogues from across the country to join us in our mission to create a welcoming America for refugees and asylum seekers and immigrants. So to join the welcome campaign, we ask synagogues to do two things. One is to commit to that vision, And the other is to take some kind of action, at least one, to express support for refugees, whether it's an education, an education event or volunteering or advocacy, something that their congregation is going to do and support. And we have 450 synagogues across all denominations, of Judaism.
Wow.
That have joined our welcome campaign. And it's the basis of our Jewish engagement and advocacy on refugee issues, which has been very strong, over the last particularly 4 years, but for even longer than that. These are the people who really have taken part in activities that have educated them about refugee resettlement and other refugee issues, and that have really been a voice for refugees in this country over the last several years.
That's great. Yeah, I was actually very curious about that myself. So thank you for that information. I think, it's the job of every resettlement agency to sort of be the bridge between our communities and the newcomer populations coming in, and how to, not only teach our refugees how to be self-sufficient here, but also allow, give opportunities to community members to be involved and engaged, and teach them how to welcome newcomer populations as well. So I do appreciate all the work that Hayez has done. So Melanie, to just wrap it up, I want you, can you just tell the audience where they can go to get involved? What's the process? What does it look like?
Well, it really depends on the individual, because there's such a range of things that people can do. And, some people like to volunteer. Some people like to write emails. There's a range of things people can do. It would be great if everyone who listened decided, I'm going to do one thing, whether it's, sign up for a listserv so that when, Hayez sends action alerts every once in a while that says, support this bill, or tell the Secretary of State to do this about this population of refugees. So those are important, and they take literally 30 seconds. So that's something. There's also, you can volunteer, you can donate, you can sign up to get involved in our election campaign, which is nonpartisan, but which is about educating candidates about our issues. Like, there are different ways that you could do that. So really, there's a whole range of ways to get involved. Certainly visit Hayez.org. I'll also direct you to Refugee Council USA, which I believe is, I don't know if it's RCUSA.org. I didn't look it up, but it's Refugee Council USA. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, RCUSA.org, which will have information about ECDC, Hayez, and the other resettlement agencies and a number of other organizations, some of which are faith-based, some of which are not, that do this work and have different ways to become engaged. So again, if you say today, I'm gonna do something, it could be a 30-second email, and that is perfectly fine and wonderful, and we appreciate everything. But again, it could get you kind of thinking about these issues and thinking about what kind of country you think we should be. Should we be a place where refugees look to find safety and a new start? Is that part of who you think we should be, our country should be? And just take a small step to getting us there. That's incredibly important and powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said, there are so many ways that you can get involved and be engaged that fit your needs and what you can do.
Yeah. I mean, if you've listened to this entire podcast, like that's something too, it's like turning off Netflix for, a half an hour, an hour, and listening to something that maybe gives you a perspective you haven't heard before. And I will tell you, the work that we've done in highlighting the stories of refugees themselves who speak directly about their experiences, what their life is like in the United States, all of it, it's really compelling to hear what they've been through, what they're doing, how they're living their lives, how resilient they've been, how optimistic they are. So I really, again, if I could, one thing that would be short would be to take a look at one of these videos. We have a video gallery at Hayez.org, and there are a number of them. If you go to RCUSA, I'm sure you could find. But that's just a really easy and, again, enjoyable way to learn about the impact of refugee resettlement and how important it is.
Absolutely. Well, Melanie, those are my only questions for you. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences about the work that HIAS continues to do for the refugee population. I know that as a fellow, you know, staff member of a refugee resettlement agency, I know the impact it creates in the newcomer population. So I absolutely appreciate and say thank you for the work that you've done.
Well, thank you so much for having me on and for these thoughtful questions. And also, you know, as again, as another resettlement agency, thank you to ECDC for your incredible work and Absolutely. Partnership.
Absolutely. So to find out more information about what we talked about today, please be sure to follow us on our social media sites, which are listed on our website, www.acc-dc.org. And please know that our podcast is available at Podbean, Spotify, YouTube, and Google Play Music. So thank you again, you guys, for tuning in for our episode, and we hope you join us again next month on Resettled, A Human Journey. Thank you.